The title of the talk tonight is We Need Boundaries Until We Don't. And I want to start with a story from the tradition about a woman called Patachara. And she had a really happy family. And then a terrible tragedy happened to her and her family, and they basically all died in accidents, one after another. And she came to the Buddha for some kind of relief, and consolation. And the Buddha said to her something very strange in a poem. He said to her, "Your crying for beings, your family, you don't know why they arrived, you don't know from where they came, you don't know where they are now, you don't know why you are here. Why are you crying for something that you know nothing about?" So, on first reading, that's pretty... There's not a lot of consolation there. There's not much compassion. And you would think, you know, there needs to be compassion in that story. But what happened is that she was so desperate that such a message kind of awakened her straight away. And what awakened her was the mystery that everything she could think about called life and death had, in the big picture, was impossible to know. So basically, he basically sort of kicked her into awakening through equanimity, through saying, the world is much vaster, the picture is much bigger than you can ever imagine this person. And that is the greatest consolation. Clearly she was ready for that. In other times, compassion is right. In other times, care and a hug is right. In other times, different forms of protection are right. I'm just putting it in that perspective because there is the Brahma Viharas, which is the four divine wide open heart movements. There is love, metta, compassion, karuna, joy, universal joy, mudita, and equanimity, upekkha. He chose upekkha in this particular story. It could have been one of the others also, but it happened to be that one. I think for us it's quite useful at a time when everything seems to be going to pieces in the world around us to know that upekkha is consolation. I mean, equanimity is consolation. That the whole picture is so much bigger than us that just resting in the big picture, it's okay. I can't solve this one. It's not up to me to solve climate change. I can do one thing that I can do, and that's it. Whatever it is. We've just been reading in the Jewish season tradition, Kohelet is read in Sukkot, I believe. And I have it here in the English, of course, so I'm sorry. there's something in Kohelet that is actually inviting us for equanimity. And indeed, Kohelet is expressing duality. We want happiness, but happiness and sadness are not separate. There will be happiness, there will be sadness, there will be life, there will be death. There is a time to be born and a time to die. There is a time to plant and a time to take out. There is a time to cry and a time to laugh. A time to search and a time to give up searching. So, there's a lot in the Kohelet, in the reading that I understand, and I've a little bit talked to people who have a more understanding from the Kabbalah about some of the text here, and it's a lot about not knowing, iyidia. Dualities. What did the Buddha say about dualities? Turn to them. Vedana. Naimli, lo naimli. Good for me, not good for me. This now, then this. Silence, noise. What we've been practicing here. Quiet, disturbance. Retreat, craziness of Ramatgan. Time off, super busy. Love and care, people screaming at us. The Buddha said, that is life. Turn towards it. Turn the gaze and see how we are with that. And there is a kind of a deep place there of steadiness, almost of comfort, of relief. Okay, I don't have to solve the problem. I don't have to spend the whole life busy with what is this to get it more nice. Naim, lo naim. I just choose the naim, naim, naim. The Buddha said, he didn't say, you shouldn't. He said, turn to the tendency that we have to do that. And that is our truth, inner truth, and there we can rest. As a being, as a human being, we turn to the truth that all the time we want to choose what we prefer. Adifuyot, this tovli, lo tovli, tovli, lo tovli. Turn to that, that's our liberation. And he said it very specifically, and I think that we can understand it after a bit of practice, that if we actually are ready to hold tovli, lo tovli, in the two, as Kohelet was saying, a time for this, a time for that, a time to live, a time to die, hold all that, we find a deep steadiness in life. Because we're not all the time, not this way, I want this and I didn't get it. This is coming and I didn't want that. That should be and I didn't get that. That has to be. That is better. This is not better. And the Buddha said it's our awareness, our mindful awareness with care and love, caring, not neutral awareness like a machine, but engagement, awareness of who we are. And we hold that duality. And then we become bigger than that duality. And then we find steadiness in life. A kind of the images of an island in the stormy seas. And it's a very clear image. The island is steady because it isn't knocked over by every wave. I need this, it's not that. Lo naimli, ken naimli. I didn't get it, I do want it. Every one of those is a wave, but the island stands there. In the middle of dualities. So our practice can take us there quite simply and straightforward. The senses do that. Our body right now might be saying naimli, lo naimli. The ears and the eyes might be saying, oh, this better, this not better. Slowly, slowly we see that's just the raw material, chomagelim, that the consciousness receives, connects us to the world, and we actually can be steady in the middle of that. The senses connect us to the world, our body, what we need, what we don't need, what's arising. There is a need, there is hunger, there is food, there is not food. There is our senses tell us all that, and the mindful awareness says, we can hold all of that and be bigger than all of that. And then we find ourselves very steady in the middle of our experience. This is not about denying difficulty and pain. It's not about trying to kind of push anything away. Turn towards means allowing our vulnerability, pegiut, allowing it, being ready for it, knowing it, seeing it, watching it arise. Very simple way. Again and again and again, we sit here and we don't have a wall to lean against because we're not in the hall there and my back is hurting and oh, I wish I was there in the hall with a back, not my back, but maybe yours. That's enough. We don't need to talk about big things. Our back is hurting. Watch it. It arises. Conditions create back pain. I allow it. It's not personal. It's conditions. This is the condition, and that's the result. We don't have to take it all personally, but we do have to know it, see it, and allow it. This is what's happening right now. Okay, that's it. I'm ready for it. We react to life, we respond to life, but turning, saying, this is the way my body-mind is responding to the situation, I'm with it. That's already in another place. Bimkom to be a kind of puppet on a buba al chutim, all the time, every experience makes us like this. There is a Zen story on anger that I like, and you probably heard it before, but there's a student that was really struggling with his anger, and the teacher said, so bring your anger and we'll sort it out together. And the student said, well, this minute I don't have anger. I've got a problem called anger, but right now I'm not angry. So the teacher said, well, go to your room, and next time you're angry, come here and we'll deal with it. And the student said, well, by the time I get to your room, the anger will have gone already. It takes 10 minutes walking from my room to your room. How are we going to deal with it if it's not there? So the teacher said, you see, even if you want anger, you can't have it. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to conditions. conditions create the anger. It's not yours. You can't have it when you, even if you want it, or you don't want it. And it's kind of understanding that we watch experiences arise by themselves because of conditions, and we are okay with that. We stand ready. We can have a painful experience, or we can have a pleasant experience, and we are ready. And that is what turning towards. That's the way we practice here. And we do this in the Mahabada, the laboratory of just half an hour, when something, there's a fly on the nose, and it's not very nice. They want to get rid of the fly. Do I send it away, or do I? You can do what you like. No one's saying you have to have the fly on your nose. But if you practice with a fly on the nose, there is a certain point where you say, actually, it's crazy. If my mother would see me now, or just with this fly on my nose and I'm not reacting. But it's a small example of how things arise, and we stay steady, we turn towards it, and we become the master, in a way, of our experience instead of the slave. So that's about dukkha. Anicca is what we talked about before, and it's another of the gradual understandings that we learn here as we sit here, and why we sit here. And it's a bit like the anger, the story of the anger. Everything arises, desires, needs, in their time, as Kohelet says, this arises, this passes, this arises. We just watch everything arising and passing. I was thinking about it the other night. I was talking to the staff. We had a session the other night together, and we do every evening in the retreat. And somehow the subject of wild pigs came up, Chazirei Bar. And I was mentioning that it was just before I came to the retreat. There was an unbelievable herd of wild pigs that just raced through my garden and around and broke trees, and I actually got up, I heard them, and I got up and I watched them. It was like a 15 buffaloes stampeding with a huge noise. I couldn't believe. And then they were gone. And then the next morning I had to kind of fix trees and tie broken branches. And moments, wild pigs arise. They weren't there before. Then they're there. Then they're gone. And maybe you have to mend a few things. A moment of anger, a moment of need, a moment of bliss and joy, a moment of nothing wrong, a moment of everything wrong. Just a moment of being. It passes, it moves, it flows like water. Our experience is like water, flowing, flowing. An image from the text is that we ourselves are, all we are, is a marbolet katan betocha okeanos. That's our life. Just it. A few minutes and it's gone. Marbolet katan, a little whirlpool in the ocean. So we watch that. Anicca is where we watch it in the laboratory of the body mind. We watch Anicca because it's a freeing place. Everything is moving. We're made of water. We flow. There's nothing fixed and solid that we have to hang on to or fight or deal with. It comes and it goes. I quite like practice with a sense of the energy body flowing and really experiencing flow in the body, zrima, because it's a good practice, flow. And it gives us an understanding. We can't catch it if we want. We don't even know what it's called. We can't hold on to it even if we want to. So it's flowing, and it's a good insight. It helps us. Nagarjuna wrote a beautiful book of, I would say, puzzling Dharma poems, Dharma impossible poems that you just can't understand with your ordinary mind. But what he said about walking, for example, is very inspiring, and a few words in the walking guidance that I gave today came from Nagarjuna. And basically he said, if you look at walking, if you really experience walking, there isn't a place where you can say, now I'm walking, because it's flowing. There isn't a walker. Where is the walker? Because the walking is happening, and is there someone in charge of this? Can you really say, I am walking? When can you say that? It's a thought. It's a summary, sikkum. And the third of the three characteristics of anatta is very much part of what the Buddha said to Patachara. It's beginning to understand that, for example, the flow, the energy body that we might experience, the breath that we might experience, the relationships we might experience, the air above and the earth underneath, it doesn't really belong to anybody. Is it my earth? Is it my experience, really? If the experience needs the whole world to be here right now so we can experience the earth and the sky and the body and the sounds of the children over there and everything, is it my experience? What does it mean, mine? So that opens that. Experience needs an experiencer. Without an experiencer, is there an experience? Without a sufferer, is there suffering? So we tend to build stories. And the stories kind of make sense to us. And so we think, I know what the world is. This experience happens and I suffer, so it's clear. And I know what to do. I take a medicine, I go to the hospital, I go to the doctor. Or I go to a retreat, or I, whatever, complain to the cook. We build stories in order to feel safe. But maybe we don't need to do that. Or maybe we can do it less. A very basic cliche, almost, slogan that is not just the Buddhist practice, but is central to Buddhist practice, is letting things be. Well, not just letting things go, because they go anyway, and we just let them go, but also let them be. What they are, let them be. It's what we're practicing here. It's in a way more exact than let things go. They will go anyway. But let things be And then somehow there's nothing to fight, and there's no struggle to fight. And this is a very powerful source of equanimity, of steadiness. Do we need to fight? If there's less of a me, what is the battle we're trying to fight? Who are we trying to protect? Who are we against? Who are we not against? Can anyone really hurt us? And the best story about this, again, is a Zen story that I'm sure many of you know about the empty boat. It's just such a classic story that I'll say it again, even if you heard it 20 times. It's about a passenger that wants to cross the river. And he sees a boatman. And the boatman says, I'll take you across. So they start. And the passenger says, okay, we go. In the middle of the river, another boat comes full of people. And they knock this boat. And the boatman was very angry. And he shouted, you know, you idiots. Watch where you're going. Anyway, they went on. And then another boat hit this boat. But it was there was no one inside it. So the boatman just went on. And the passenger said, why you didn't shout at the other boat? It did the same damage. The boatman said, well, there's nobody to shout at. And if we feel like that, if we can experience less me in the center, we might feel there's nobody really to shout at. We can only be shouted, we can only be offended, elbon, if there's somebody there to be offended. If we're less of a somebody, we cannot be offended. We're so much less hurt by things. So all of this is giving a certain direction, but it can feel just not me. In other words, I'm not ready for that. It's too high somewhere. The story of Patachara, okay, but I'm not Patachara. It's fine. We are what we are. So I just want to raise some stories and some reflections that have come in this retreat so far from different people that illustrate, should we say, really coming back down to earth, not up there about equanimity at a level of Patachara, but really daily life as we are here. How it works in practice. And one of the things that's come up again and again is the issue of boundaries. How much protection do I really need? I can't, just because the Buddha said you don't need any protection. Equanimity is shirion built in ire, an invisible shirion. But I need a shiriya. I need to cope with life, and I need to stop some things from happening. I'm not ready. So one of the things that's come up in this retreat already is a sense of duality between a retreat and quiet, and then being thrown into the fire of daily life, our working life, relationships, issues, struggle, money, work, friends or non-friends, politics, whatever. And many of us might feel that a retreat is a refuge, and it's right. But when I leave the retreat, I have no refuge. And the only thing that I can look forward to is 6 months' time when I can come back to Endor. And so there's a duality there that we can feel that we're attached to retreat. And our practice might take us to a place of attachment where we're not actually quite aware that we become attached, for example, to silence or to quiet. Or to samadhi. I really like it here in the retreat because everything settles down and everything's so quiet and people are so loving. And I'm concentrated and then I go out there and it's just So I need boundaries there. I need to know when to protect myself. I need to say no to this and no to that. How do I do that? So there's a duality. how much shirion chitzoni do we need? So this duality, I'd like to give as an example of wise practice with of equanimity. So the first thing is, yes, we have to allow things to be the way they are, and if we feel we need protection and a boundary, it's okay. Never mind what the Buddha said about paticcara. If we need a boundary, we need it. If we're leaving the retreat and the first thing that happens is news on the radio, TV blaring, crazy amount of media, and we say, I want to shut it off, I want to close, but I can't because there's other people there. No, shut it off. Protect yourself. It's okay. Someone's aggressive, invading, unpleasant. You say, I can't cope with that. I've just come out of a retreat. Shut it off. Go somewhere else. It's fine. We don't want to be... We need to know our limits. So we need external protection sometimes when we need it. I was laughing. I think I told this story last retreat here, which was a few weeks ago. My first retreat was in India, and it was in Jaipur in 1976. And after 10 days of intense practice, 13 hours of sitting a day, the retreat finished, and in the corridor I met an Indian with a little bag, and he said, do you want massage? I said, okay. But I was like really just shaking like this. And he said, okay, you sit down. So I sat down, and he began to beat my head like this, because that's what happens. Head massages, tuk-tuk-tuk-tuk-tuk, like this. I was just... I saw stars in the sky. We need limits. We do need limits. Don't feel that we shouldn't have limits just because we've been on a retreat. And sometimes we need more limits because we've been on a retreat. We're vulnerable, we're naked, we feel we don't have a skin, we're open. And we can get more sensitive. We can be practicing, you know, deeply for hours, and we feel like we're naked and we're just like a kind of no shell. And then to go out into, I don't know what, high-tech company, and everyone's fighting everybody and trying to push everybody and stress and so on. It's really difficult. And sometimes we just have to say, no, this is a boundary. I have to draw a boundary, and that's fine. But as we practice these three directions, one is allowing our vulnerability, not fighting our vulnerability as a being in a body, born into this body, and we're vulnerable. Allowing it, knowing it, dukkha, it's there. Secondly, anicca, that it's passing, that it's moving, everything is flowing. And the third, anatta. A little bit at a time, if we practice those three characteristics, we can push that boundary. We need less and less. So it's not being totally empty boat, but being a little, we can call it being a bit more playful, being a bit more flexible, being a bit lighter. So yes, it's a stressful place, but I'm dancing a bit more, but I'm okay with that. Okay, let them shout. I'll manage. You know, it's just pushing. So it's fine to have a boundary, but a little bit move it all the time in a playful way. Be playful with life. Take risks. Take risks. It's okay. And so, boundary, but play with it. Secondly, if we see the dukkha, we can explore the dukkha. Where is the pain of disturbance, actually? Where is it? How is it? What is it? Disturbance happens. We say, oh, I want to go back to the retreat. It's so quiet. It's so much samadhi. I want to go back to samadhi, and there's just so much disturbance. Where is that? What is that? How is that? How does it change? Where in the body? Where in the mind? Where in the soul? Where is it? Where in the tradition? Where in the history? Where in the, because the chain of beings, of rebirths, is dukkha. Where was it for me yesterday? Really open dukkha availability as a field of exploration and not just a problem. Okay, keep opening dukkha, our vulnerability, because it's our teacher. And from being with dukkha, it doesn't matter whether it's a pain in the back when we're sitting here. And one person I spoke to today said there was a pain, physical pain, but when I turn towards it and change the attitude, let it be, suddenly it became workable. Suddenly it was workable. We don't need to expect things to disappear, that painful experience will not be there, but we can say it's workable. And that's really a big thing. Nitan la louche, because how you say it, to play with it, to work with it. That's all we can do. We can't stop it, and we can't pretend that it's not there, and we can't pretend we're not a person and all this. But it's workable. And when we feel it's workable, bit by bit, dukkha will be less dominant. It will take over less. We also, that's pushing the boundary of protection. But bit by bit, not all at once. And if it does become overwhelming, there's always compassion. It's still in the Brahma-viharas. Compassion is the big open heart that says, I can't handle this. This is more than I can handle. But the heart says, but still I hug myself. It's not my fault. I don't have to carry the world on my shoulders. I'm hugging myself with the pain. Compassion is the heart engaging with difficulty. And the heart, again, Brahma Vihara, it's impersonal. I don't have to carry the whole of samsara on my back, all the beings that living and dying. I don't have to carry all that. It's not just me. So compassion says, yes, I understand. Yes, it's overwhelming. It can be overwhelming. But I'm with it. A third direction to move our boundaries or to move our protection or to make it the protection less solid. And that's an interesting one. I think we'll talk about it tomorrow. Equanimity is the seventh of the seven factors of awakening. So it's in a way the fruit of a lot of different qualities that we develop as we practice. So we go through, awareness is one of them, inquiry is one of them. Joy and ease is the refuge that we talked about, is a sense of ease, a sense of being at home, silence is an experience of quiet, is an experience, samadhi is there. All of these are really helpful as qualities that we develop. So supposing we're in the middle of a tremendous disturbing noise, but if we develop a quality of understand silence, then we can maybe sense the silence inside the noise. Can we sense the silence in the noise right now? Can I, as the source of the noise, the disturbing sound of language, can I experience silence at the back of the words? Can you experience silence as the words arrive, enter the ears and the mind, create meaning and thought, and are gone? And is there silence there somewhere? So, silence or is not shutting down, but is an experience of samadhi. Patience is one of the qualities, or steadiness. And all of these seven factors, I'm not going to go into them now, they're all qualities which we develop which help us to be more equanimous. If we're joyful in life and we develop joy right now, a sense of well-being, I'm here sitting here, there's nothing wrong, I'm just okay on the earth and under the sky. I must be okay to be able to sit hours and hours like this and, you know, quiet. Those qualities become built into the soul, the neshama. And those qualities will help us. A moment of insecurity, viruses, diseases, whatever, but there's a joy behind that, and there's a silence behind that, and there's an awareness behind that, and there's a kind of patience there. And all those qualities are really helping us to deal with threat. And they're instead of shirion. So they help us move the shirion, move the protection, to be a bit more. My book, The Five Powers, talks a lot about that. It's actually about those qualities. My new book. And finally, the other understanding, again, which is the one that the Buddha hit Bhattacharya with, this one. Do you really know what's going on? And of course, it's in Kohelet. There's a lot in Kohelet about, do you know what's going on? There's a phrase here. Elohim, God, put not knowing in the human heart. The big picture really helps us to be more steady, balanced, with less expectations and more sense of our ability to be with the changing life. There is deep teachings, especially in the Tibetan tradition, but also in the Theravada Dharma tradition, of being with a kind of stream which is less dualistic, less one thing against the other. When we are disturbed and we need protection, There is very basic duality in that. I am here and I need to protect myself from the world. I threw out earlier kind of a comment that if we and the world are one, if the world or if life is just looking out of our eyes, then who can disturb whom? This is something we can realize as we practice, maybe slowly, slowly over years, retreat after retreat, we begin to be less separate from the world. The world and us become intimate. And then we can feel we're simply less disturbed, because it needs two to be disturbed. It needs a disturbance disturbing somebody, like the empty boat. But the empty boat is practice. It's about emptying. It's about anatta. I'm really talking about something which is not just practice, which is the fruit of practice, which is that as we get closer, hitmazgut, we become absorbed in the world through opening the eyes, through erut, through awareness. The world and us become one. It's very small things. We see that the ants crawling there and the peacock over there, they're like us. We are there together. The cats passing by, the Mary's little dog, that we're all together. And this sense of being all together, it goes deeper, 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 so that we feel a sense of oneness. And the sense of oneness is the ultimate protection, because then there's no friction between us and the world. And maybe that's ultimate, maybe it sounds very beyond, but small ways we can experience it right now. We can, in this retreat, we can pick it up. Not in this ultimate absolute sense, but the sense of being with. To be with, to be more open, to be connected with, to be in relationship with. And this is a, in homeopathic doses, in Minun homeopathy, it's oneness. And in that place, we cannot be disturbed. Thank you. So we'll take a couple of minutes of quiet. So we'll have 25 minutes or so of walking, and then gather for the metta practice.